Yeah, pretty good. I think it'd be easier if people were kind of going into the bookshops and out and about a little bit more, and if there was a little bit more, I suppose, energy around rugby, it would be better. But we're really, really happy how it's gone. It's been well received. A lot of the schools are starting to find it and recommend it to kids because some of the lessons in it are well put across. And yeah, I get lots of things on social media from parents saying, like, listen, their kid has never read a book before, and they love rugby, and they only want to think about it as rugby, and this is the first one they've read, which is lovely. Lovely to hear. And we've started on our third one now, which will be coming out later this year.
Oh, very nice. Can you give us any hints for what might be involved in that?
It's all Lions, yeah. Gordon has to navigate the trials and tribulations of getting selected for the Lions, performing for the Lions, and hopefully winning a test series.
Lovely. And traveling as well, which is obviously out of reach for a lot of people at the minute.
It's, what you call it? It's always darkest before dawn, isn't it? It does feel like there's no end in sight, but thankfully we are getting the vaccine been rolling out, and I think life will return. It's just a question of when. But I don't think traveling for sport to watch it is going to supersede any sort of safety concerns. So I think the Lions and things like that, all these games like Six Nations on the cusp of now, these games need to be played, and there's an awful lot of financial ramifications, and even more so than there has been in the last 12 months, just need to play out, and we just need them to happen. And if it's behind closed doors, you know what, so be it. We'll look back at this in hopefully 5 or 6 years, and it'll be a talking point when we're back at games safely.
And obviously, over the last kind of month or that, the French government in particular has been getting a little antsy about these Six Nations games. We do have a sort of a timeline, but it is still up in the air at the minute because cases have been going up all over Europe, not just here. Do you think that we will get the whole round of games played?
Yeah, I'm fairly confident we will. I think the French government, they weren't willing to let the European Games go ahead, and listen, that's well within their right, and it is a smaller competition than the Six Nations. I think they pushed for bigger guarantees and stronger guarantees, and I think they got them, and they're happy enough with that. We were talking off air about any sort of leniency that might have been there in the November internationals when cases were nice and low and everything. That's gone now, and there's going to be strict bubbles. And we saw what happened with the Barbarians and the knock-on effect that had. Everybody's learned that lesson, and the bubbles will be tight and maintained.
And let's just be positive anyway and say that we will get all five games played, and hopefully we'll have a
Yeah, no,
very enjoyable
I'm very
tournament.
confident that because this is a national, like, you look how seriously the IRFU took this. When we were in the Aviva, they were cleaning down with disposable wipes the corner flags, even though nobody had touched them. So that's going to be mirrored across the French Union. Like, nobody is going to take a risk with that. So the games will go ahead. That I'm pretty sure of.
We've got you here to talk about the big squad announcement this week. 36-man panel for Andy Farrell. The name that stands out to us in Southeast, of course, is Tadhg Furlong, who's back for the first time since around this time last year. It was February 2020 in that England game. How ready do you think he is for another big, massive test?
I think he's going to play for Leinster this week, so that'll give a good indication. I think, going into Wales, I'd be surprised if he starts, but as long as he comes through unscathed this week, gets 60, 70 minutes under his belt, he's going to be an incredible guy to have coming off the bench with 20 minutes or 30 minutes to go in Cardiff. So he's really, really important to what Ireland want to do, because rugby is a very, very simple game. You have to have a set piece to win the game. There's very few teams in the world, I think probably South Africa, maybe New Zealand, could win with a misfiring set piece. And I don't think Ireland are at that level where they could win without a firing set piece. So it's hugely important. Andy Porter's done a brilliant job, but it's not his, that's his second best position. His best position is the loose head. So, it is really, really important that we get a fit and firing Tadhg back.
And we will come on to the line-out issues that plagued 2020. But just if you don't see a Tadhg Furlong starting against Wales, I presume you do see Andrew Porter starting, and you did mention that it is his second best position, but he has come on in leaps and bounds and, has stepped into Tadhg's role very, very nicely there. Do you think that Tadhg is still number one if both are fit and healthy?
Not at this stage, as I'm saying there, if Ty gets through, you know, 50, 60, 70 minutes for Leinster this weekend, I'd see him coming in off the bench next week, but I wouldn't see him starting straight away. I'd say they'd still go with Andrew Porter, because you also have to reward somebody who's been playing consistently. And then every game he plays at this level, he does seem to get better. And they'll know, you know, he can focus for 40, 50 minutes, get through those scrums, because that's the only real, it's not even a weakness, that's the only area that he's not, you know, a world-class tight head prop in.
And from the other side of things, another Wexford man, Paul Boyle, hasn't been included, even though he had been performing well and a couple of people had tipped him for maybe getting in, you know, maybe not playing too much, but maybe even getting into the squad. Paul hasn't been selected, but we do have to preface this, I guess, by saying that the back row is probably our strongest line for the Irish team, and it was always going to be difficult to dislodge some of the lads that are in there. But how far away do you think Paul is? Do you think that maybe next year's Six Nations is maybe the time he might step up?
I think, like, listen, I don't think that's a conversation even at the moment. I think he's done phenomenally well. You know, he's had quite an unconventional route to professional rugby. He's done really well. He's captaining Connacht. I think Connacht, I suppose their fortunes need to improve a little bit more, and he needs to be a little bit more consistent to be getting into that into that level. I think if you look at, say, the consistency of Reece Ruddock this season compared to Paul Boyle, you know, Reece being, you know, very, very, very consistent, and Boyle being a little bit firing hot and cold, and that comes with experience. And, like, listen, I think when he starts delivering those consistent performances as well as being that captain, you know, that's when you start looking at the pressure of, you know, how do you get into a national side. But I think, you know, he needs to cement, like, while he would have very close to cementing a spot in the Connacht side, and he is the captain there, I think a little bit more mileage, and we'll see where he goes. All you can do as a player is continue your, you know, what you can control, and that's playing for Connacht week in, week out. And once he gets that kind of consistent level of performance, you know, then you can start asking questions. But I think that'll be his first challenge.
Yeah, that makes sense. And we don't want to spend this whole entire chat talking about players who aren't included in the squad, but, you know, there's always the usual grumbling over scrum half selections for the last couple of years. We've got Conor Murray, Jameson Gibson-Park and Craig Casey, who I guess would be considered a little bit of a bolter there, played well with Munster for the last little while, but John Cooney must be sitting at home thinking, what more do I have to do to get included?
I don't necessarily agree with Craig Casey coming in as the third nine. I'm not sure he's played enough or delivered enough to be in there. I think there's players in Connacht and in Ulster that should have played. And Luke McGrath has been barely set a foot wrong in Leinster. So I would say I did find that an odd decision. But, like, listen, happy to be proven wrong in that. But I think there is probably two, if not three, other scrum halves that, you know, you would be sitting at home now feeling a bit miffed, I'd say.
Yeah, maybe somebody like Kieran Marmion or even Caelan Blade. Craig Casey obviously is being picked on form, I guess. There must be something about him that Andy Farrell is looking at, thinking that maybe he is one for the future.
Yeah, and absolutely. That's, you know, that's a coach's prerogative where they can actually say, listen, I see something, this guy, we've had him in as that, almost like an Esquire in 2020. We like what we see. We potentially want to get him game time. It's funny because for me, it goes against the kind of picking of the squad, because it's quite a conservative squad, and then you've actually picked a guy who doesn't have a huge amount of minutes under his belt for Munster, whereas everywhere else in the squad is quite conservative. So it's just a little bit surprising, more so than anything else.
And then just one step out at 10, we've got Jonathan Sexton, obviously captain of the side, and then Billy Burns and Ross Byrne as well. Which of those two do you think is second choice to Sexton right now? And are we looking at maybe some problems coming down the line? I mean, obviously, if Sexton stays around until the World Cup, that's all great and dandy, but he will be, you know, quite an age when that comes around. And I think it was Liam Tolan was saying this week that it's, you know, 2.5 years away to the World Cup, but only about 26 internationals, if you want to see it that way. And I think there's only about 15 caps between Burns and Ross Byrne as well. So do you think that there is going to be this kind of experience gap if Sexton steps
away? I don't think there's an experience gap. I think there's a scramble to see who's going to be there. I think, you know, listening to Ronan O'Gara this week, and he was talking about, you know, we all lament the loss of Joey Carberry, because one of the things that hasn't happened is a natural successor for Jonathan to put his hand up in most transitions. You know, 12, you know, I was looking at my mortality every time Robbie Henshaw played, you know, Johnny with Ronan with David Humphreys. Jamie Heaslip, Dennis Leamy, Anthony, like there was always the next guy waiting. Whereas in 10, nobody seems to have really stuck their hand up and kind of gone, I'm the next guy in behind and I'm pushing. You know, Billy Burns has done fine. Ross Byrne has kind of, you know, one foot forward, two steps back. So to be honest, I don't know who's the next in behind. You know, Billy is probably the more creative and natural playmaker, but brings an awful lot of defensive frailties to that position. So it's going to be interesting to see who does get the backup slot and how much game time they do have. And, you know, that will bring a little bit of pressure to whoever that is, because Joey Kirby is starting to get back on the pitch. Now, we don't have any timelines or anything like that, but there's a guy who is probably one of the most naturally gifted rugby players we have in the country. So, you know, as soon as he's fit and healthy, people will want him on the field.
And it is probably a bit too early, but there has been some talk, especially kind of over the last 2 weeks, that there might be a case of actually just skipping over a generation when it comes to moving on from Sexton to maybe the likes of a Ben Healy, if he keeps going with the progression that he's made this year. Harry Byrne has been a name on everybody's lips as well. Do you think that that might be a case as well, especially looking towards 2023?
Not at this level, and it's not this far out from a World Cup, and I think these guys need to dispose of the people that are ahead of them in the pecking order at their clubs before they can even be considered at a national level. Like if there was a President's 15 or something, yeah, by all accounts, get them in there and get them playing. But like, you don't give out caps for free. And like, I suppose what I say about Casey kind of holds for Healy and for Harry Byrne. You know, they need quality game time at the clubs. Until that happens, they don't get to feature at an international level, because I think it cheapens what happens at the club levels. And you know, I think you look at the Munster piece, and Van Graan has rewarded JJ with consistent performances up until the Leinster game last week, and you look at the impact Healy had when he came on, and I think you are seeing that natural, I suppose, progression and natural handover happening in Munster. And it's up to Healy now to see how much pressure he can put on Ross Byrne and Billy Burns in the next kind of 6 to 8, 9 months in November. Where does he sit in the pecking order is going to be very, very interesting to see.
It certainly will. And you were writing in your column this week about the lineout, which had a pretty disastrous 2020 like the rest of us. But your old teammate Paul O'Connell has come in now, and hopefully he'll be able to change up the calls and the tactics a little bit. They have been going stale, I suppose, since the Schmidt years. And I know you were writing as well that, you know, a lot of people will think that Paul O'Connell will come in and just sort of scream the door down and, you know, fill the players full of confidence. But he's an awful lot more tactical minded, I suppose, than a lot of people would give him credit for. And a lot of the analysis seems to be that the problem lies with the hooker and the actual throwing in of the lineout. And do you think that it's that simple, or is there a problem with James Ryan? And
I'll stop you right there. That level of technicality and expertise, there's few people in Ireland will accurately be able to diagnose things like that. I've chatted to second rows, I've chatted to Mal O'Kelly, I chat to hookers, talked to a friend of mine, Dave Blaney, who played in Leinster and played over in the UK as well. And you know, they will say various different things. It hasn't been compounded by one thing, because if it was just the hooker, you just replace the hooker till you find the right one. You find the best thrower, you put him in, and you know, you have it. It has been a mechanical error. It's a system error across the line out. And you have that with a transition, you're saying you have now. You know, we've been spoiled with having a guy who's 6'10" and being able to use him in line outs. You know, both James Ryan, Ian Henderson, both young callers in rugby. Ian injured an awful lot, so the calling coming back to James Ryan, there's an experiential thing there as well, and it's also a confidence thing. So I don't expect Paul O'Connell to be a panacea for all of that, but I do expect that they will look to and go, right, we need ball, what ball can we get? And I'd say they will look to winning ball and then building the game plan off the back of that. And that's how you build confidence, and that's how you build a foothold into the game, not the other way, going, oh, we want the ball off the tail at 6. Everybody wants that ball, because it's really, really hard to defend, because you just can open up the pitch so much. But it's also the hardest one to win. But if you look at South Africa in the World Cup, they won an awful lot of ball at 2. England, Leinster at the weekend, Munster at the weekend. Sometimes you just have to cut your cloth and win. But I think Paul coming in is going to challenge that. And he's been, I suppose, as a player, has been the guy there where the lineup has malfunctioned and has had to think his way out of it and redesign it. So he's going to help James Ryan with that, challenge him and get him up the curve, because Paulie's been there. It's a great thing about, you know, this knowledge and this experience transition. You know, it can't be taught, but it has to be learned. And you can see James Ryan and Paul O'Connell really spending an awful lot of time together.